Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. You're listening to episode 9 of the show, and this is a very special episode. We're going to start off with some announcements, though. As I record this intro, and as you listen to it if you're listening on release day, my summer break is over. In just a few days, I will be back to school again with 2 weeks of work to be done before students show up at the school for the 2017-18 school year. My summer has been full of professional development opportunities, conferences, amazing conversations with other educators, meeting new people, and building my PLN. And that doesn't even start to consider this podcast, which has truly grown over the course of the last couple of months that I've been on summer break. Again, with amazing conversations, but also new connections and new opportunities. You'll remember, for example, that I announced a partnership with VoiceEd Radio a few episodes back, and that has been awesome. But despite all these awesome things floating around my head, my mind keeps coming back to students. In about 2 weeks, students will enter my school ready to learn, to experience, to grow. And so this episode of the podcast is all about students. A few months back, I had the pleasure of interviewing one of my former students, Evan Jones, who had just finished his freshman year in college. Evan is one of the most mature students I have ever interacted with, truly personable and intelligent, and with a wisdom that is well beyond his years. And sometimes beyond his not always perfect grades. From there, I also reached out to friends and family members with their own kids and asked them to record their kids answering one of my 3 questions. So in this episode, you get to hear Evan discuss what he thinks from a student's perspective is the biggest problem in education and what he wishes teachers would do and who his favorite teachers are. But then you also get to hear from Josh, Kayla, Sammy, and Isaac about some of their thoughts too. Also, stay tuned to the end of the episode to hear some announcements about Season 2 of the Planning Period Podcast. All right, so today on the Planning Period Podcast, I am joined by a former student at my school, Evan Jones. Evan, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, guys. Well, it's a pleasure to be speaking with you today. I am presently a freshman at the University of Central Florida studying human communication, and I met Mr. Schreffler when I was a student in a Central Florida high school that he taught at.
Cool. So I thought it'd be interesting to have you on, having just finished your freshman year in college, having come through the public education system, and I thought it'd be interesting to sort of get a student perspective on some of the questions I ask a lot of my guests. And I'm so obviously tailored a little bit to a student perspective, but we're still going to sort of stick with those same 3 questions I ask all my guests. And I will point out, Evan is the first student that came to my mind when I thought of having a student on the show, mainly because I've never met a person who can talk quite as eloquently as you. In fact, it's gotten you in trouble in the past, the way you speak.
I think it has. People take it as patronizing, or like I'm trying to, you know, like assert like a sense of self-superiority. And teachers will find it disingenuous, but most teachers appreciate it and just know that I'm well-read, you know, been reading since I was a kid.
So. Yeah, and then one of the things I loved about Evan was he was our NHS president last year, and the NHS sponsor was in the same, his office was in the same room that I often had lunch during your free period. So you would regularly come in and say hi and tell us your stories. And
all my misadventures.
Misadventures. And your stories always crack me up. So
thank you.
Thought you'd be a great person to have on the show, both for entertainment and an interesting perspective on what we deal with in education. So we'll start with that. We have a small audience standing outside looking to see what's going on.
Flattered.
That's great. Thank you for that. All right. So let's go ahead and get started with my first question for you.
Yeah.
And that is, what is, in your opinion as a student, the biggest problem facing education right now?
Okay. Well, I'd like to begin with saying that if I could go back and you know, change my education experience and switch from public to private, I would not have done it. I firmly believe that public schooling is the best way like a student can be educated in the future. You know, I plan on my children attending public schools. I think it's, you know, excellent for exposing, you know, children to diversity and at an early age, like teaching them that, you know, people are different from you and you're not going to be surrounded by people from the same socioeconomic strata, or everyone's not going to worship the same religious deity. So I'm very satisfied with like my 12 years in a public school. But when I consider some of the issues that I think are facing public schools, especially in the state of Florida, is I think that at an early age, we introduce advanced level courses. And it seems harmless at first, but in the sixth and seventh grade, when students are being divided by, they're divided into honors classes and advanced classes. I mean, I think this is terrific for the students that make it into these honors classes, and it's ultimately determined by their testing performance. And, you know, I was always a student in an honors class or in an advanced class. So I felt that that experience enriched me from an early stage. But what I think happens to a lot of the students that aren't placed in honors classrooms is, like, from a very early stage, I think they're kind of left behind. And I think once they end up in high school, they don't have much incentive to take advanced placement courses or challenge themselves. And I think from middle school to high school, you have maybe about a third of, like, the school's population, or a third of the student population that's going to be taking higher level courses, building attractive college applications. And then you have the majority of students who are going to be taking rudimentary courses. And I think they develop a sense of complacency and reluctance to challenge themselves. And I don't think the school system does a good job of making them feel as valued as AP students. I was always an AP student. I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. But I think that the distinction is too fine between AP students and non-AP students. And I think we're quick to winnow out students who aren't taking AP courses as not being, like, college bound or being technical school material. So I think that, like, we could probably shy away from dividing kids in terms of, like, dividing them into different intellectual cabinets, like, from an early stage, because I think that it's unnecessary to be funneling kids into honors and advanced classes in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, especially considering that they're not going to make it to their, you know, high school transcripts. So I think advanced placement courses are great, but I think that it should be a level playing field by the time everyone enters high school.
Okay. Now, isn't it because the idea of acceleration and accelerating students, you're certainly not the only person to think that is where we could have issues. In fact, mm-hmm. I interviewed Nicole Mutters recently, who you know as well, and she said the same thing. She said, you know, acceleration is the problem. Slightly different take on it, obviously, but that same idea is definitely echoed by others. So it's funny to me that as a student, you're so aware of that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But secondarily, I feel like we probably need some level of division. There should be some differentiation happening. Just as a teacher, it's having a group of similar-minded students makes it easier to teach them.
No, I agree.
So what does that middle ground look like to you? What do you think might be a better middle ground than what we're doing currently?
Well, I think it begins with refraining from having honors and advanced courses available to students in middle school. I think that because what happens is, I think when students enter middle school, there's this assumption that they're developing into the people that they're already going to be. They have a bit more liberty in choosing their classes. If their test scores, you know, are in line with what's expected of an honors student, then they're placed in honors classes. So I think that when kids are 11, 12, 13 years old, they're still, I think, like, at the epicenter of their personal and intellectual development. And I think it's too soon to begin categorizing kids. So I'm all for the grouping of like-minded students. I think it's beneficial for students as well as teachers. But I think that it's too early to begin doing that in middle school. So I think by the time they're freshmen in high school, and, you know, they've gone through, you know, 8 or 9 years of their, you know, fundamental courses, then I think that's when it should be up to them to choose classes. And I don't think that we should rely on their testing performances to make this decision.
Okay. I think it's easy to say that it doesn't rely, that it all relies on tests. There's a lot of other factors that go into determining if a student is in an honors class or regular class, whatever. I taught middle school for a few, you know, 4 or 5 years before I came to the high school level. And one of the things I used to always tell my students in middle school, the honors and the regular kids, I would, first of all, with the regular students, I would always say, "Welcome to Honors English." Mm-hmm. And they would say, "This isn't an Honors English class." And I'd say, "Well, yeah, it is. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't care what your schedule says. Like, you're going to do the same as the Honors class does." And I would always tell the Honors kids, I would ask, "What do you think what do you think makes this an Honors class? How is an Honors student different than a regular student?" And the inevitable answer they would always give is, like, "Well, we're smarter." And it's funny because they would always, like, not want to say that. They would feel like it's condescending, but they ultimately would say, "Well, we're smarter than a regular student." And I say, no, that's not
true at all. Yeah. So at this stage, the only difference is your willingness to do the work. I may have to push a quote-unquote regular kid more than I might have to push an honors kid. But otherwise, I agree with you in the sense that, like, in middle school, they're not developed enough to have honors or regular. Do you see that problem now that you're finishing your first year at college? Do you see that problem pushing forward into the college level?
Absolutely not. I mean, they have an honors program and an honors college, but I don't think it's as emphasized as much as it is in high school, because I think there's a very attractive social appeal for students who are taking advanced placement courses. And I think all parents know about advanced courses and honors courses, and all teachers, you know, most teachers teach honors courses along with their regular courses. But in college, it's not as prominent. So for students who desire the extra rigor, then it is available to them. But for the most part, everyone in college, all of my peers, we're trying to get our degrees. We're taking the same courses. We come from vastly different backgrounds, and there's really no there's not much of a presence of these honors classes or of more advanced classes.
Okay. Do you think part of that is because of the specialization of a college by nature? So you can pick your program, and therefore you're taking the courses in your program, and you're going to pick a program you're apt to be more successful at.
Yeah, I think that does, like, influence it as well.
So I think if we could, I kind of would like to see a model of public education where there is more differentiation available to students. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with the advent of online classes, we could do that.
Definitely.
One of the things I've talked about on other episodes is we have a ton of online offerings in our county. Like, in fact, we, as you know, require you take an online course as a graduation requirement. In fact, if I remember right, you barely made that. You waited until the last minute do your online requirement. But there is an online requirement. You have to take at least one online course. But all the online courses we offer are the same courses we offer at the school.
Yeah.
We're not offering a unique experience when we're offering that. And when I talked to Jay Svetko, he said one of the things we could do is we could offer, say, a meteorology class. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to have enough people in one school to take that, but we could give it to the statewide at an online level, and then we'd have enough people there that might be interested in doing it. Do you see that like an appeal like that might, or do you think a system like that could appeal to students?
Yeah, I think that has huge potential. I'd like to comment on, you know, your reference to my, like, personal history with online courses. It's tricky for people, like, from my generation, because in elementary and middle school, I mean, we were so dependent on paper and writing. And now that we're and once we've entered high school, there's been, like, a larger emphasis placed on digitalized curriculum. And so for a lot of us, we're very much stuck in our ways. But I think for younger students, there's like, they're going to be more willing to utilize the online resources and technical resources that they have available to them. For a lot of us, we were entering our senior year, and it was now being enforced that everyone has a laptop. So we were very reluctant to comply with this, because for the past 11 years, we had been turning in paper assignments. We were used to face-to-face instruction. So when everything was digitalized and we were expected to complete an online course, for many of us, it was so unfamiliar that, you know, we were very apathetic towards online curriculum. So I think I was a member of a lost generation, but fortunately, I think my generation is being replaced with students who are more technically literate, students who are going to be more proficient in using computers and, you know, making effective use of online resources. So I think that it's a wonderful idea that they'd be able to take specialized online courses that might even help them explore, like, a future interest or an idea of a profession they might want to have one day.
You know, you mentioned something, and I'm curious just because of my job. You know, given that I'm the digital coach and I implemented much of the program that you and your generation were so resistant to. So Evan was a senior. Our school's first year is a one-to-one. Mm-hmm. We handed out the laptops and everything his senior year. So I'm curious, do you feel like that year of digital, that year of one-to-one instruction of your senior year, do you feel like that helped you this year going into college?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I found that at the University of Central Florida, and I would assume that at most large state universities, especially state universities that are very progressive and have to deal with large numbers of students, like with growing, you know, student populations and enrollment sizes, I think that it was a great thing for us to use the laptops our senior year, because because nearly all of my assignments are submitted online. I can't remember the last time I took a note, you know, on paper with a pencil in college. It might have been like the second class of my freshman year. It was a humanities class. And then I quickly, you know, resigned to using my laptop because professors at the collegiate level, you know, move so quickly that it's nearly impossible to take notes by hand. So I think it was beneficial. As much as it was annoyance having to convert to the digital formatting and turning things in online and compiling, you know, all of your assignments online, it did prepare me for college and what the expectations are of a student at a public university.
It's cool to hear because that's kind of what I always tell people.
Yeah.
But I've never actually like...
No, I can validate that. Yeah.
So I'm glad that what we're doing is actually working.
That absolutely.
Makes me feel good.
It's not always welcomed, but it's definitely working.
And I think you're right in the sense of last year's freshmen, this year's freshmen definitely have a different situation because they're already mm-hmm. going into transition and then they transition to digital.
Yeah.
And, you know, next year all of our middle schools will join in. So that'll be, you know, a big deal for all of them. So cool. I'm glad that something I'm doing makes a difference.
Yeah. And I think that the future is promising, especially if we're incorporating more digital media in middle school. I think it's going to be a seamless transition to high school. And you're not going to have any whiny brats like myself wanting to submit things, you know, with on paper.
Screaming at the computer because it doesn't work.
Yeah, making excuses.
So let's go to my second question. And normally my question is, what is something you're doing in your classroom you wish all other teachers would do? Obviously, you don't have a classroom,
yeah.
So that's not quite the same question for you. So instead, I want to ask, what is sort of a unique or interesting learning experience you had from one of your teachers that you wish more teachers would incorporate?
All right. I'm going to try to make this as unambiguous as possible because it seems like this grand, very broad, overarching idea. But I think... And I can reference my fourth grade teacher. I think it's been most helpful for me in a classroom when I'm not confined to like a set of questions or a direct standard. And so in fourth grade, my teacher would encourage us to write, and she would give us the tools necessary to compose structured sentences to make our writing intelligible. She would teach us how to, you know, formulate a story. But then when it came time to put pen to paper, she let us do it, like do what we wanted. And we were able to come up with any story or any poem or, you know, we could even write a nonfiction if we choose. So she gave us a lot of creative liberty. And then when we'd share it with each other, everyone's differences were always appreciated. And the more unique and the more distinct a student's writing style, like the more that they were lauded. So I think when teachers, so to tie this to like a high school experience, I think when teachers give us the tools necessary and imbue us with the knowledge that's pertinent to the subject they're teaching, and then let us kind of demonstrate like our understanding in our own way and whatever that way is, I think that's when it's most stimulating for a student. And I think that's when students are most engaged, because they feel like they have a bit of influence over their assignment and they're not being, you know, like held in a box by a set of questions or straightforward directive.
I don't think my audience will believe that I did prompt you on some of these things.
No.
But I mean, I didn't. I told you the questions 5 minutes before we started recording. So what you're describing in terms of educational terminology is you're talking about a very student-centric, you're talking about
absolutely.
Student choice.
There you go.
You're talking standards-based mastery instead of making them all complete an assignment. And similar to, you know, again, I go back to Nicole Mutters because we talked a lot about this, and she said the same thing. You know, one of the things she used to do, as she explained, was like a bingo card of sorts where you had each standard and then three different ways you could prove you understood that standard. And rubric-based grading instead of just complete this activity.
Yeah, and to add to that, I like the idea of giving students three options to demonstrate that, like, their understanding of the material. Because if there's anything that I know, when I was leading, like, the National Honor Society, and when I had to work with student leaders below me, and we were all collaborating to orchestrate, you know, an army of 500 volunteers, I found that people love variety. And I know, like, with my job that I have now, when I'm working with people, when you do the same thing, people get bored. And when people are bored and uninterested, quality of their work is diminished. So when things are new and things are fresh and they're able to demonstrate competence in a variety of ways and give new ideas a try, I think that's when people are performing their best and, you know, doing their best work.
Move to my third question for you then. And I think you kind of already touched on it, but who is a teacher that influenced your life the most?
Okay, may I say her name?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Mary Estes, fourth grade teacher at a Central Florida elementary school. I was profoundly affected by her classroom conducting style. I felt like she encouraged like a very open environment where yes, we had the standard assignments where, you know, we had to select an answer A, B, C, or D, but a large part of her curriculum dealt with, you know, fostering creativity. And she was, and in fourth grade, that was when we took our first standardized writing test. So I can see why like this was present in her classroom. A lot of our curriculum was focused on writing. You know, she was like a writing teacher at a high school previously, before she taught in an elementary school. So she was very passionate about writing. She was an outstanding writer herself. And when we'd write, we would, like I had said earlier, we would write whatever we wanted. And no student was ostracized for like a poor story, unpleasant word choice, or bad syntax. I mean, every student's story was heard, appreciated. And each day we would share what we were writing, and she was teaching us how to write effectively, how to captivate an audience. But it was ultimately up to us to put this to use and to let our creativity roam free. So she was my favorite teacher because I felt like I could express ideas and in a very like outlandish way through writing, and I could be like the weird kid that I am at my core. And she appreciated that, and she, you know, celebrated everyone's differences. So she was my favorite teacher. I loved her so much that like we're Facebook friends. We stay in touch. Mr. Schreffler and I are Facebook friends as well. And she was at my graduation party. So she's a central figure in my life to this day. We stay in touch. So yeah, she had a very profound effect on me, and I'm indebted to her for how she helped me, you know, discover my voice and increase my own confidence.
So she's the one we have to blame for the fact that you never shut up?
Yeah, she and my mother are the ones, yeah.
Sounds about right. So tell me, and we'll probably make this a little bit shorter episode, just can't exactly talk educational technology terms all the time, but so tell me, looking back, you finished your first year of college at this point. You just had finals like last week, right?
I did. So. Actually took my last test yesterday.
Okay, yeah. So just finished up your first year of college.
Feels great.
What do you think of when you look back at high school?
Well, I mean, Mr. Schreffler, to be perfectly honest, I feel like my experience was significantly better than the average, you know, high schoolers. Because anytime I talk to other parents or other students about high school, sometimes I'll meet like family friends and they'll have students preparing to enter high school, and they ask me like, oh, what'd you think? How were your experiences? And I have to remember that my experiences aren't going to mirror many experiences of other students. I mean, being NHS president allowed me to be friends with the principal, and I had access to so many opportunities and got to speak at, I had public speaking engagements. So I am thoroughly like pleased with my experience in high school. I think that for the most part, my teachers were superb, especially my teachers in my earliest years, 9th and 10th grade, when I was just taking my fundamental English courses and algebra. As much as I despise algebra, Sam Leneve was a stupendous teacher, and he leveled with me. He met me in the middle. He knew that I didn't think much of algebra. He knew that I thought learning mathematics was futile, but he acknowledged my you know, my discontent and just worked with me, and when a teacher meets you in the middle and acknowledges the way you feel about a certain subject, then I think that that you're able to you know, to grow in that classroom, and you're a bit more receptive to assimilating new material. So my earliest years in high school, before I became NHS president, before I had created like a network of awesome connections, like with Mr. Schreffler and all the people that I met with the National Honor Society, I was very happy as a student. So I tell all of my friends who are entering high school, all my family friends who have students about to set out for high school, I tell them that it is what you make it. At a public school, I think there is a huge opportunity to fail and a huge opportunity to succeed. So I think it comes down to student initiative. And I do think teachers play a role in you know, influencing, you know, the development of a student. And I can say with full confidence that all the teachers that I've encountered in my public schooling experience aren't doing it for the salary, because we know teachers don't do it for the salary. teachers are doing it because they want their students to succeed. They want to see, like Mr. Schreffler said earlier, they want to see that they can be a story for the kids in the future. They want to have a lasting effect on students and change their lives for the better. So I'm very satisfied with my experience. Wouldn't have changed a thing.
So would you say one of the key points I take from that is that your involvement is what's so critical?
Yeah.
Finding
yes.
Group. And it doesn't necessarily need to be NHS, I would think.
No.
Like, I mean, it just...
could be athletics, could be music.
But being involved in something is critical.
Yeah.
And you said, I love what you said about there's a great opportunity to succeed and there's a great opportunity to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having that involvement is what will make it more difficult for you to fail. It is possible, especially at a school our size, it is easily possible to slip through the cracks and silently fail and no one may notice.
Well, think about it like this. You know, anytime you're investing money, you're encouraged to invest multiple stocks. You know, don't put all your eggs in the same basket. So I think the same could apply in high school. If you are diversifying your portfolio and you're being involved in multiple activities and you're not just a student, but you're not just an athlete, because we see many students fall into an either or category, students who are on the football team but could not care less about their academics. But when you prioritize more than one, you know, involvement at a public school, I think that's when you see yourself grow more and you are a more successful individual at both.
Again, every time I listen to you speak, I'm like, there's no way anyone's going to believe this is staged. Oh. They're going to all going to think, like, we prepped every bit of this. That's okay. So do you have any other closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts? I can't think of any, just that I was honored to be on the show. And
hey, thank you.
First
thank
podcast. You. This is so fun. You know, like when we began, I was so focused on making sure that each word was enunciated correctly. Didn't want to, you know, slip up on my sentences. But then I just started to look at Mr. Schreffler more and just think of this as a conversation, and everything comes out naturally.
That's the goal of the show. Yeah. So that's what I'm going for.
Yeah.
So, well, Evan, thanks for sitting down
with
me. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming out after you are not needing to be here anymore. I appreciate
it. It's my pleasure.
So thanks for coming out and sitting down and talking. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
So my favorite teacher I probably ever had was Miss Batista. She was my fourth and fifth grade teacher, but she's also probably the most important teacher I ever had. She's the one that, you know, truly opened me up to learning and made me want to learn and made me, you know, have that passion to try to further myself. And, you know, none of my other teachers had ever really done that before. And without her, I probably wouldn't have had the same academic success that I did, just because I wouldn't have enjoyed learning as much as I do now. And so she really made a really big impact on me and definitely helped improve my future.
My favorite teacher would have to be Mrs. Cannon, who was my Algebra 1 teacher for freshman year. Not only was she an amazing math teacher, but she never let me give up and only encouraged me to try harder. She never gives up on any of her students, and there has to be more teachers like her. Despite the disagreements that we've had then, she has been the teacher that has taught me the most to this day. Whenever I need her, she's there, whether it's for math help, emotional, volunteer hours, etc. I think teachers that make connections with their students have the best successes. At least for me, it meant everything to have someone by my side helping me when I needed it. She helped me grow.
What is something you wish all teachers would do?
Be nice.
Anything else?
No.
And then who is your favorite teacher and why?
Miss Hackett Mellow, because she's my favorite teacher.
Why does she your favorite?
Because she's always so nice.
So she's always so nice? Okay. And who is this? What's your name?
Samantha.
Okay. So if you could... if you wanted all teachers to do something, what would you want?
I wanted them to do something like building Like building? Building what?
Building, monster truck.
Monster truck?
Anything yeah.
else?
Yeah.
Okay. And who is your favorite teacher and why?
Miss Jewel.
Miss Jewel? And why?
Because she's really nice to me every day.
Every day? All right. And what's your name?
Isaac.
I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. The insight of those students astounds me. Thank you to all of you who contributed to this episode. So, I tease some announcements in this section. This episode marks the end of our summer series, or as it were, or at least the end of my summer schedule. The show will take one more week off before starting back up with a regular weekly release schedule. So, starting August 11th, you will get episode 10, which I am considering the start of season 2 of the Planning Period podcast. And then you'll get an episode every Friday from then for a while. That episode is a particularly special episode to me, as I interviewed my own dad and retired elementary school principal. In addition, I want to let you all know about some other cool things I'm working on. Followers on Twitter will know that earlier this week I did a special live episode of the Planning Period podcast on Voice Ed Radio. That episode of the podcast will be edited and packaged, as all my episodes are, and released in season 2. However, during the live interview, audience members got to listen to some behind-the-scenes type stuff, like the pre-interview and bloopers and mistakes, and those things would normally be taken out of the final episode. That practice is something I will be continuing, so if you would like to listen to me record an episode live, make sure you tune in to Voice Ed Radio, which you can find at voiceed.ca, or follow me on Twitter for dates and times. I have other ideas in the works for live shows with Voice Ed as well, so stay tuned. Thank you as always to Kevin McLeod for our opening and closing music, Vicious. You can check him out at incompetech.com. If you like what you're listening to, please go over to iTunes and write me a review. To make things a little easier, I made a tiny URL that will get you straight to my page. That web address is tinyurl.com/planningperiod iTunes. Again, that's tinyurl.com/planningperiod iTunes. Also, if you would like to be a guest on the Planning Period podcast, or just have feedback you want to give me, message me on Twitter. I'm @BradStreffler. I'll see you all in a couple of weeks.